Hi, Cliff Goldstein here, and I want to start out with a story. It's pretty much an apocryphal story. It's kind of taken on the veneer of an urban legend, though I guess floating around among scientists. And Steve Hawking is the one who I first heard it from. And in case you don't know, Steve Hawking is a mathematical physicist. He's the author of A Brief History of Time, a book that I think one out of every nine people in the whole world has read. And he's also a Lucasian chair of physics at Cambridge. And that was the same chair that Isaac Newton held a few hundred years earlier. So I figure if Steve Hawking, from author of A Brief History of Time, could tell the story, Cliff Goldstein here on the Hope Channel can. Now, the story tells about philosopher Bertrand Russell, and you're going to hear me quote Bertrand Russell a fair amount. In fact, you're probably going to hear me on this show quote a lot of Brits. I admit I'm an unabashed Anglophile. I love England, everything about England. I think if I was living here during the Revolutionary War, I probably would have had to flee to Canada. I would have been a loyalist. I think I picked it up from my high school teacher who was an Anglophile, and so when he was a kid, his friends wanted to be policemen, the other ones wanted to be fire, and he always wanted to be an Englishman. So whatever, you're going to hear me quote a lot of English people. Well, anyway, according to the story, Bertrand Russell was giving a talk on cosmology, just talking about the planets circling around the sun and the sun moving through the galaxy and basic stuff. This was probably 60, 70 years ago. And according to the legend, the mythical old lady in tennis shoes, she gets around quite a bit, doesn't she? The old lady in tennis shoes comes up to him and says, "Mr. Russell, that's all fine and dandy, but as we know, the world really sits on the earth sits on the back of a giant turtle." Well, you know, Russell, probably getting a kick out of that, as he would, he said to the woman, "All right, ma'am, earth sits on the back of a giant turtle. What does that turtle sit on?" And she says, "Well, it sits on another turtle." And he goes, "Oh, okay. And what does that turtle sit on?" And she says, "Another turtle." And then when he starts to ask her again, according to the story, and it's been told in different versions, she waved her finger at him and said, "Save your breath, sonny. It's turtles all the way down." Now, I would assume that most Hope Channel listeners don't believe that the earth sits on the back of a giant turtle. Fair enough. But what would you do? What would you say if someone came up to you and said, "Okay, that's your truth that the earth doesn't sit on the back of a giant turtle. But in my truth, in my worldview, it does sit on the back of a turtle." Now, if you're not comfortable with that, if you're not comfortable with somebody saying that, then I'd say that's good. I think we have an opportunity here for an intelligent discussion on a crucial issue. And that is the whole question of the existence of truth. Does truth even exist? You know, people sometimes talk about I'm a seeker for truth, but does it even exist? I mean, how can you find truth if you don't think it's there? You'd have better luck looking for Atlantis or the Fountain of Youth or trying to find the square root of -1 if you didn't believe that truth exists. And the fact of the matter remains is that there are many people who say no, that they say that there's no such thing as truth, and to even ask the question, something like that, about finding truth is false and misleading. And that's a topic that I really want to look at a little bit for the time we have together. This whole question of, is there even anything as truth? Now, I think many of you know this famous story of Jesus before Pontius Pilate. I don't know whether you've read it in the Bible or you happen to see Mel Gibson's movie. And either way, if you remember the story, Jesus is brought before Pilate and they enter into a discussion because Pilate's like, "What am I going to do with this guy?" And at one point, Jesus says to Pilate, he says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, then my servants would fight." And Pilate says, "Are you a king?" And, you know, and Jesus gives, "What of this I was born, and this cause I came." And then Jesus says something very interesting. He says that I've come into the world that I should bear witness to truth. And Jesus starts talking about truth. And at that point, Pilate says something to him. He says something to him he says, "What is truth?" What is truth? Now, you know, that's not really a simple question to answer. You know, you might think so, but, you know, in the old days, the question, what is truth, was simply another way of asking, is such and such true? That the question being addressed wasn't about the nature of truth itself. Instead, the question was about the object under discussion. What do I mean? Well, is it true that the king's dead? Is it true? Are the priest's words true? Is it true that you can't step into the same river twice? See, these were questions about the objects, about the king, about the priest's words, about stepping into a river. The objects under discussion was the focus. But you see, it doesn't quite work that way today. Today, if you ask the question, what is truth? Many philosophers and thinkers have turned their focus on the concept of truth itself. What does it mean? What does it mean when you say something is true? Now, that's not as simple. It's not as simple as you might think. When you say, for instance, when you say it's true, that 2 plus 2 equals 4, is that the same as saying it's true that Led Zeppelin's earlier music is much better than its later music? You're using the word true both times. But are you saying the same thing? When you say it's true that Jorge Luis Borges is an Argentinian writer, are you using the word true in the same way when you say that it's true that Hamlet had an encounter with his dead father on the walls of the Elsinore Castle? Okay? When you say it's true that God exists, are you using the word true in the same way when you say it's true that there is no truth? In all these cases, you're using the word true, but you're really using it in radically different ways. In fact, you know, we throw the word truth, you know, true or truth out all the time, but you know, there are many theories today about what it means to say something is true. There's all philosophical schools on this. For instance, there's the correspondence theory, which says, well, something is true depending on if it corresponds to the real world. And it's really dependent upon your senses. You know, the only way you know, because how do you know what's out there other than your senses? And your senses could fool you. Trust me, I'm 10 times uglier than the camera makes you see. You can't tell by what you see. So that's got its problems. There's another thing called the coherence theory. And this basically says something is true if it's logically consistent with itself. Well, you know, that's fine. But I could sit there and make up a whole story, a whole fairy tale that's perfectly logically consistent, and the whole thing just came out of my head. Are you content to call that true? Okay, then there's another thing called the pragmatic theory of truth. And this is basically, it boils down, truth is what works. Well, okay, you know, there's something to that, but, you know, Mussolini got the trains to run on time. I mean, does that mean that fascism is truth? So there are problems there. And then there's another fancy one called deflationary theory. And deflationary theory of truth basically says there's no grand theory of truth. Just look at what you're looking at the moment, and that's what truth is. If it's true that the house is white, if the house is white, period. Okay, now all these various positions on what it means to say, these are all various positions on what it means to say something is true. So it's not that simple. Of course, there's a whole school of thought, which goes back, hundreds of years before Christ, called skepticism, or some like to call it epistemic nihilism, which basically denies the possibility of even knowing if anything is true, or even having any justified belief. According to this thing, you just can't do it. That's the argument. People will argue the same thing today. You can't know truth. Now, think about this for a minute, though. The argument to say that you can't know truth, and that's what skeptics teach, that's not the same as saying that there is no truth. They're two different things. Some people deny the whole idea of truth, period. Others deny that we could ever know it. It's not the same thing. But on a practical level, what's the difference? If there is truth or not. If you know, what's the difference? If there is or is not truth, if you can never know it. And of course, this leads into two other concepts of truth. One view is called realism, teaches that all objects are mind independent. Truth is totally independent from our minds, okay? Another view argues that truths are partially mind-dependent, that truth depends upon our minds. And, you know, this last one is not that intuitive, but if you think about this, try to dwell on this, because it's not totally intuitive, but think about this. If there were no minds in the universe, if there was no consciousness anywhere at all in the universe, what sense does the concept of truth mean? What is the idea of truth if there's no being, no consciousness at all to think about it? So the whole idea of truth depends upon a mind. Well, just think about it a little while. Also, think about things, too, that don't exist independent of our minds. I talked about that in another program. I mean, is there such a thing as sweet or sour? Independent of a being that can taste sweet and sour? Can something be ugly or pretty independent of a mind to make a judgment about it? So I guess the point here, there are a lot of questions, there's a whole bunch of different angles we could go, but the point that I'm trying to make here is this question, what is truth? It isn't as clear cut and simple as people would like to make it out. It's fraught with a fair amount of difficulties. One of my favorite quotes about truth comes from a 20th century philosopher, a well-known philosopher named Richard Rorty. In fact, I once emailed him, and I was so excited. I sent him an email once and said, yes, sir. I said, all I want is a yes or no question. Did you ever write a paper called Did Newton's Laws Exist Before Newton? And he answered me back, yes, that he wrote the paper. I should have printed out. I was so thrilled one of these famous philosophers had emailed me. And the question was that he wrote was, did Newton's laws exist before Newton? That gives you an idea of where this guy's coming from. But Rorty's whole concept of truth, and maybe he said it a little in your face, but if you read his philosophy, you can maybe understand. He said, truth is what your colleagues let you get away with, okay? That's for him. That is what truth is. Now, these are not new questions. This whole question about truth, what is truth? Can we know truth? How do we, you know, what is truth? Plato. So we're going back 2,300-2,400 years. Plato, in one of his dialogues, wrote about a battle with the sophist Protagoras. And you might have heard of Protagoras, or maybe not, but you probably heard of his famous statement where he said, man is the measure of all things. Now, there's a lot of debate about what he meant. Did he mean man as a single man? Is each individual man is the measure of all things? Or did he have the idea of a community at large? The community, we really don't know because we just got his scraps of writing. So anyway, his point is man is the measure of all things. Well, Plato went ballistic over this. Plato argued, said, using that logic, you might as well say a dog-faced baboon was the measure of all things. After all, a dog-faced baboon, like a human, has eyes to see. Like a human, it has ears to hear. Like a human, it has a mouth. I mean, it was a sentient being aware of reality. So why shouldn't the dog-faced baboon, as much as a man, be the measure of all things? And you've heard me talk about my dog before. I got a dog, and I look at my dog, and I see my dog interacting. And I wonder, what is my dog's view of reality? So we all have a view of reality. But who's us to say that all views of reality are the same? They're not. We all have different views of reality. But the question is, which view is the true one? You got 1,000 different people, 1,000 different views of reality. Which one is the true one? Or is there even a true one? Does it even make sense to talk about a true one? Again, this is the point that I'm trying to ask. Is the concept of truth as a grand universal explanation of everything even a true concept? Notice a little problem there in that question. Is the idea of a grand truth even a true concept? We'll come back to it. But see, that's been a big question. That's been a big question, one that's been hotly debated over the centuries, and one that's even debated today. And I say that there are many people, Many people today that say no. This whole idea of a truth, as truth with a capital T, is just a fallacy. It's an error. We shouldn't even be talking about it. It's old-fashioned. It's antiquated and so on. Let me read you a quote here from a fellow named Houston Smith. Houston Smith, Beyond the Postmodern Mind. And he wrote, he had this thing, and he said, here's his quote. For 2,500 years, philosophers have argued over which metaphysical system is true. For them to agree that none is true is a new departure. So basically what he's saying is that they're now saying it's not a matter of which one is true. They're saying none are true. Then we've got Nietzsche. I'll probably be quoting Nietzsche quite a bit here, too. Nietzsche once said, truths are illusions. That which we have forgotten are the truth are illusions that we have forgotten are illusions. And then there's another one, a Canadian named Jean-Francois Lyotard. And he said, let us wage a war on totality. And what that means, what he's basically saying is we don't want any of these grand overarching total things. Truths are just kind of individual personal truths, what you happen to. And I already mentioned already Richard Rorty. He once said that he wasn't interested in learning the truth about the world. He didn't believe there was any such thing. His only concern was just learning how to cope with the world. And then there's another one. One of my favorite authors on this is a Frenchman named Michel Foucault. And if there ever was an X-rated life, this guy was one. And there was a funny story with Foucault, and it fits right in. There was quite a debate in France, a death penalty debate in France, and the people who were against the death penalty wanted to get Michel Foucault, he was a famous intellectual, to write an article in the French papers denying, you know, against the death penalty. So they figured Foucault says he's going to do it. So he writes this article in a French newspaper, but instead of going against, you know, abolishing the death penalty, he writes this article wanting to abolish prisons completely. He said we should tear all prisons down. Well, those people who are, you know, the death penalty people had a fit over this. They wouldn't want to tear down all prisons, but why would he say tear down all prisons? Because Foucault took the position that ideas like criminality and insanity and justice and right and wrong are all human constructions. There's no such thing as truth. He talked about what he called regimes of truth. Truth is simply what people in power use to oppress others. Okay, so again, there's no grand truth here. It's just, you know, truth suddenly becomes something political. And really, in many ways, the whole postmodern movement is like that. We don't prefer one concept of truth over another. It's just, you know, all individual views and so on. There was a famous philosopher of science, I think Thomas Kuhn, I think he might still be alive, who basically argued that science itself isn't so much grasping truth about the world, but it exists in a certain, what he called, paradigm. And it's got certain concepts that it uses, and within this certain paradigm, these things are truth. In fact, there's a whole movement of people who attack the whole concept of science as telling us any truth at all. In fact, I heard something the other day I thought was funny, where some people argued that that it's a sexist or it's a racist or some kind of equation that light travels at 186,000 miles a second. Because that was preferring the speed of light over other speeds, and that was considered, you know, uncouth or something. So it gets a little weird. This whole idea that you can't assert truth at all. In fact, one person once said, nothing is certain, not even that. And if you look at that idea for a minute, let's think about that. Let's look at this idea. If he made the statement that nothing is certain, not even that, that being the statement, nothing is certain, then even the idea nothing is certain applies a truth of sorts. The truth being that nothing is certain, not even the idea that nothing is certain. Confusing? All right, good. Let's look at it another way then. I realize that's a little confusing. I was standing in a bookstore in Maryland one day and got in a discussion with someone who said to me, everything is a lie. Okay, well, you know, I kind of mulled over that. And I came to a few conclusions about it. First, if everything is a lie, then that must include the statement that everything is a lie. Thus, if everything is a lie is a false statement, then it must mean that not everything is a lie. So there must be some sort of truth out there, right? See what I'm saying? Now, second, how can the idea of a lie exist if there were not truth? Now follow me on this. How could the sentence, let's go back to our little story in the beginning. How could the sentence, the earth sits on the back of a giant turtle, be false unless the earth didn't sit on the back of a giant turtle, but rather moved through space due to the force of gravity? In other words, the only way that the statement, the earth sits on the back of a giant turtle, can be a lie, is if the earth didn't sit on the back of a giant turtle. Okay? That is, if there was something true that made the statement, the earth sits on the back of a giant turtle, a lie. Can you follow me on that? If you said the statement, all men have two heads, is a lie, it's a lie only because a specific truth exists. And that truth is that all men don't have two heads. So my point on this is that the whole notion of a lie depends upon the existence of truth. Something can't be a lie unless there is a truth that makes it a lie. The very idea of a lie means that truth of one sort or another has to exist. So to deny that truth exists is to assert a truth. It's to assert the truth that, is to deny it is to assert a truth. The truth you're saying is that there is no truth. So it gets kind of convoluted. So the whole idea of denying the existence of truth is self-refuting. To deny the existence of truth is to utter what you think is a truth. Thus, the idea that no truth exists is really incoherent, nonsensical, and self-refuting. Now, this is the same thing as saying that we can know. Now, this is not the same thing as saying we can know truth. To sit there and say that there truth has to exist isn't the same thing as saying you can know truth. And that's a whole other question that I don't want to get into right now. Can we know truth? My point is simply to try and show that this common idea that there's no such thing as truth is really self-refuting. It's ridiculous, because to make the statement there's no such thing as truth is itself to assert a truth. Now, there's one other approach to this that I'd like to take, and this is sort of a personal story. I grew up very much in this postmodernist idea that there is no truth, no truth with a capital T. They're all just a bunch of little truths. There's no absolute truth. There's no ultimate truth. There's no ultimate reality. You know, it all comes filtered through our minds, and that's it. And you got your truth, and someone else has got their truth, and someone else has got their truth. And it didn't matter if the different truths were mutually contradictory, because there was no ultimate Archimedean point to stand over and say, well, my truth is right and yours is wrong. There was no way to do that. And that's how I always believed. Then one day, though, I was sitting in a pizza parlor, and I was eating a pizza, and I was reading a philosopher who said something to the effect of, in order to live the most perfect life upon the earth, you needed to find out the reason why you were here and live your life accordingly. Well, for whatever reason, that went into my mind almost like a prefrontal lobe lobotomy. And it totally wiped out all this relativism that I had. And it suddenly hit me, look, there was a pizza sitting on the table in front of me. Now, there could have been 1,000 different people with 1,000 different views of how the pizza got there. People could have believed the god Marduk created the pizza and put it there. Other could have believed aliens dropped it down in a flying saucers. Other could have believed it evolved, whatever. There were 1,000 different explanations, 1,000 different people. People were so adamant about how the pizza got there, they would have killed or they would have died for their belief in how the pizza got there. But the fact of the matter remains is that there was a pizza on the table. Somehow the pizza had to get there, okay? You could have a million different people with all different views, and maybe every single view on how the pizza got there was wrong. But the fact is, somehow the pizza got there. And however the pizza got there, that was the truth about the pizza. So I'm sitting here in this pizza parlor, and suddenly I step back and I think for a moment. Now, wait a minute. if there's got to be a truth explaining how the pizza got there. And I looked around at the world. I looked around and I felt myself. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's something here. I mean, there's a reality here. And then it just hit me. It just hit me. In the same way that there had to have been an explanation for the pizza. I mean, there was a pizza. As I said, everybody can be wrong. Nobody can know it. But somewhere out in the universe, somewhere, there had to be an explanation for how that pizza got there. And then it hit me in the same way that here I am. There's a world out here. I know it comes filtered and all that rest, and I don't have full access to it. On and on. I go on and on. That's all fine. Not denying that. But then it hit me that in the same way, there had to be an explanation for the pizza. And whatever that explanation was, that was the truth about the pizza. In the same way, I realized as I looked around, somewhere out there, there's a world that I'm in. And in the somewhere out there, just as there had to be an explanation for the pizza, there had to be an explanation for the world. There had to be an explanation for me in the world and the world around me. And that explanation, whatever it was, whether I could ever know it or not, that was the truth about the world. Okay, so it suddenly hit me. You know, you might say, oh, Mickey Mouse could have told you that. But hey, if you had been raised the way I was raised and educated the way I was raised, it was my own personal Copernican revolution. Because suddenly then I realized that despite everything I had been raised, everything I had been taught, truth has to exist. Okay? Somewhere out there, truth has to exist. That doesn't mean, of course, we can know that it's true. Know what is truth. That's a whole separate issue. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not getting into that at all. But I'm saying the sudden realization that truth had to exist means that truth is there. And if truth is there, that means that we have a chance perhaps to one day know it.